This is Fresh Air. In the current issue of Mother Jones magazine, journalist Raymond Bonner issues this warning. Unless the United States is prepared to become not only the world's policeman, but the world's missionary, we will have to address the UN's institutional failures in Somalia. Bonner just returned from 4 years in Africa, where he reported for The New Yorker and wrote a book about conservation controversies, which will be published this spring. He went to Africa when his wife, Jane Perlez, became the New York Times correspondent there. Bonner is a former Times reporter. When he was the paper's correspondent in El Salvador, Time magazine called him the most energetic and controversial reporter on the scene. Bonner says the Somalis distrust the UN. I asked him why.
There are a number of reasons. In part, it was during the Siad Barre regime when he was the dictator. The UN was putting money into the country, and many Somalis saw the UN as propping up Siad Barre. But perhaps more significantly, Terry, during the year 1991, when there was really a horrendous war going on in Somalia, the UN was nowhere to be seen. I mean, it's been described as one of the most critical 15 months in Somali's history, and the UN simply wasn't there. It was the time that the UN should have been playing a very active, very positive role, both on humanitarian relief, but also politically, using its offices to try to bring about a settlement of the clan fighting. If the UN had acted at that time, we would not have had the famine that we had. It's important to realize that this is a war-caused famine, not a weather-caused famine. It's man's famine, not nature's famine.
Do you think the UN missed opportunities when it could have done productive things in Somalia?
Yes. It's not only a case of the UN not having taken the initiative. It even spurned opportunities to act. There were two occasions when Somalis approached UN officials at a very high level and asked the UN to use its good offices to try to reach a political settlement. And both times the UN actively said no. The UN said, we do not want to get involved. And for the Mother Jones piece, I got access, in fact, to a cable that had been sent from New York to Somali leaders saying they should be discouraged from trying to involve the United Nations, the Secretary General's office in New York. And that at a time when the UN might have played a role that could have reached a political settlement, and then we could have avoided these problems.
Where was home base for you when you were living in Africa?
We lived in Nairobi.
I know you made a lot of trips into Somalia, right?
A few. I didn't make that many into Somalia. Actually, we went, one of the most amazing trips, I suppose, or revealing and staggering, was in December of 1991. We went to Somalia, and at that time the carnage was just unbelievable. I mean, I've been in Central America, I've been in Asia, I was never in Beirut, but this was carnage like I'd never seen. I mean, bodies lying all over the place, hospitals, just blood pouring down the hallways practically, no medication, no facilities for caring these people. It was anarchy at its worst. I mean, there were young men roaming the streets, just firing their weapons indiscriminately, no discipline of any kind, firing anti-aircraft weapons down the street. And I remember talking to one man who said he'd been sitting in a market, and whoosh, came a shell, and the legs were blown off a friend sitting next to him. Saw a little boy in a hospital yard. His leg had been blown off. His whole family had been killed when an artillery shell landed in his yard. As we stood there in this hospital yard, and it was outside the hospital. There wasn't even any room in the hospital to bring in the wounded. As you stood there, every second, a new batch of wounded people was being brought in. You know, men with their guts shot out, women legs shot off. I mean, it was carnage, just unbelievable. This was in December of 1991. It was a time when the world simply didn't pay much attention. Jane came back and wrote what was a front page piece for the New York Times. I actually wrote at the time was writing for the New Yorker and wrote a talk of the town piece. But there was no international attention. This was also a time, Terry, where the UN, this was right after the UN had been asked to use its offices to try to reach a political solution, had declined. And then the war broke out at its worst. There was no Cyrus Vance, no Lord Owen, no senior official, and the UN was not even in Somalia. So the world really wasn't paying much attention to Somalia in December of 1991.
So you were onto the story before the World's Press Corps landed in Somalia. Then, okay, the World's Press Corps came to Somalia. But you were also looking at a lot of other stories in Africa at the same time. Do you think that there's a lot of African stories that we're overlooking as we're focusing on what's happening in Somalia?
Well, there's one that's extremely relevant right now to Somalia, and that's in Sudan. If we went into Somalia for humanitarian purposes, there's going to be American troops in Sudan in 18 months, if not sooner, because the famine in southern Sudan may be worse than the famine in Somalia. When the pictures start coming out of the stick-like figures, of the emaciated people, of the horror, you know, the people dying from starvation, then there's going to be pressure to get involved. You have ethnic cleansing going on of tribes, of ethnic groups in the southern Sudan. It's just not being reported at the moment, which is not a criticism of the press necessarily, but we can come back to that. And in the Sudan, you have there are American and Western, if you will, Western interests at stake. You know, and I say that because it used to be a tenet of American foreign policy and of most countries' foreign policy that you only sent troops abroad when interests were threatened. We had no interests threatened in Somalia. We went in for purely humanitarian reasons. In Sudan, there is an argument to be made that we do have interests in the Sudan and that they are being threatened, and that is because of the government in Khartoum. I mean, the Sudanese government, the government in Khartoum, is an Islamic fundamentalist dictatorship, is what it is. And its human rights record probably ranks up there along with North Korea's, a few places like that that are still left. It is a horrible government, brutally oppressing its people and carrying out a war against the southerners, those who live in southern Sudan. I mean, essentially, in simplest terms, the Khartoum government, the government in Khartoum, the Sudanese government, is Arab and Islamic, and the people living in the south are African and either Christian or animist. And there are security interests at stake. The Khartoum government has cozied up to Saddam Hussein, is probably getting support of some kind from Saddam Hussein. There have been reports that terrorists now find it possible to move in and out of Khartoum with relative ease because the government has not tried to control them. There have even been reports that there may be training camps in northern Sudan.
My guest is journalist Ray Bonner. He just returned from 4 years in Africa. He's a former New York Times correspondent and reported for the paper on El Salvador. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Journalist Raymond Bonner is my guest. In the New York Times, when you were writing for the Times, you reported on a massacre in a village, El Mazot, which was questioned by the U.S. government, questioned by some other journalists. You were criticized for just siding with the leftists in El Salvador and for being politically biased. And recently there was a team of forensic archaeologists who were sent to that village and they uncovered bones and I believe a mass grave. And that seems to pretty well confirm that there was a massacre there. You did a wonderful interview about this with Scott Simon on Weekend Edition on a recent Saturday. There are a couple of things I wanted to ask you, though, about that about that story. First of all, let me give you a chance to correct anything I got wrong in that little summary.
you're much too diplomatic and polite, Terry, to say that the government questioned the reports and that I was criticized. I mean, the government didn't question them; they denied that a massacre had taken place. They flat out denied it. The American ambassador at the time, Ambassador Hinton, said they sent somebody up to investigate and they found no evidence of a massacre. It's simply not true. They sent somebody up to investigate and, in fact, the person came back and said they didn't do a very good job of investigating, but, in fact, the person said, we believe there was a massacre. You know, the State Department went, a senior State Department official, Assistant Secretary for Latin America at the time, Tom Enders, went up to the Hill and testified and said, simply, we have no evidence that a massacre of this level took place. And then the Wall Street Journal editorial ran a, you know, an entire editorial. They didn't bother to divide it that day in two, and said that I had been overly credulous in believing the peasants, that I had gone out on a limb in reporting about this massacre. And in fact, these same peasants are now the ones who are being cited on the front page of the New York Times, as you say, and elsewhere, as providing evidence that in fact there had been a massacre just as we had reported it.
What was it like for you as a journalist to have your credibility challenged like that, to have your credibility impugned? And how did you try to defend yourself?
There's no way you can. Yes, you know, it is unpleasant. It didn't feel very good to be attacked the way I was. It was all part of the ideological temper of the times at that time. It was a very conservative era, as you remember. There was a lot of red baiting going on. Mm-hmm. Central America was the ideological fault line. That's where Washington, the Reagan administration, was fighting what it perceived to be the holy war against communism. You know, as the ambassador used to say, former ambassador Robert White used to say, you know, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, all the way up to the soft underbelly of Kansas. That's the way it was. I mean, he didn't believe that. He used to say it in criticizing the U.S. policy. That's what that all was about. But there's nothing you can do. I mean, you report what happened, and you can't defend yourself. That's not what a journalist does. A journalist writes what he or she sees, and when the criticism comes, it comes. I mean, it goes with the territory. Look, we give our lumps, we take our lumps. I was writing for the New York Times. There's a lot of benefits of being a New York Times reporter, obviously, but part of the territory is when you write something, it has a greater impact, and so you're going to be criticized. You know, Alma Guillermo Prieto was a Washington Post reporter at the time. She wrote the same story, the same massacre story. We were not in there together. We were in there separately, saw it separately, and wrote it. But she, the Wall Street Journal, when it did its editorial and other criticisms that were later leveled at the reporting about the massacre, tended to single out me and the New York Times. Not me because I was Ray Bonner, but because I was with the New York Times, and on a story like that, the New York Times had more power even than the Washington Post. But it's all ideological, Terry. I mean, look, I've written about other massacres. I mean, you were right when you noted that I was accused of political bias. I mean, it was even stronger than that. I mean, I was accused publicly of being a leftist sympathizer. I think even in one case, I was accused of being a Marxist on public television. It's all ideological, because I've written about massacres by the Shining Path in Peru. I've written about, I wrote a piece about the Saddam Hussein's massacre of the Kurds, probably one of the best pieces I ever reported. No, nobody criticizes that reporting. Nobody in Washington criticizes that reporting. The administration doesn't criticize that reporting, because reporting about human rights abuses and massacres by Saddam Hussein or by the Shining Path in Peru fits in with their ideological agenda or American foreign policy.
You say everything's ideological. Your forthcoming book is on controversies over wildlife conservation in Africa. And I think you've been getting some heat from liberals about that, because you're not taking a stand that they support.
Yeah, I thought the criticisms I'd taken from the U.S. government to reporting about American foreign policy were sharp and pointed. Boy, it's nothing like the attacks that have already started. I mean, the book's not even out yet. It's not even going to be out for another month. It's just from a piece that was in the New York Times Magazine that has already brought an incredible number of letters to the New York Times Magazine, where it was excerpted, and also to the publisher, even before publication. You know, it's basically, the book doesn't take the standard line on conservation. I mean, basically, the book says there's more to conservation than animals. You've got to do something about people as well.
So what kind of heat are you getting for it?
Well, it's primarily people who've never been to Africa, don't understand anything about Africa, don't really care about the African people, and think you've got to do whatever you can all the time to save every individual animal, and don't understand the complexities of conservation. You know, they're just, accusing me of being an elephant killer, one letter said, you probably believe in clubbing baby seals to death, too, don't you? I mean, it's all emotional. Terry, it's very similar to the attacks that came, the political attacks that came from Washington when I wrote about massacres in El Salvador. You write about things that people don't want to hear, and they don't want to hear it, and that's the point. They're going to do whatever they can to criticize you.
Journalist Raymond Bonner, his article on the United Nations and Somalia is in the current issue of Mother Jones Magazine. This is Fresh Air.